on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us this morning. In a bit, we'll hear from theater critic J. Wynn Russick with her review of the new production of a Rodgers and Hammerstein classic at the Olney Theater Center. But now, it's time for Living Questions, our monthly series examining the role of religion in the public sphere. We're producing this series in partnership with the Institute for Christian and Jewish Studies, and in a couple of weeks, ICJS will hold its annual Mannequin Clark Lecture. The speaker this year is my guest this morning. Eboo Patel is the founder and president of Interfaith Youth Corps in Chicago. He was a member of President Obama's first Faith Council, and he's been invited to give a TED Talk, to speak at the Clinton Global Initiative, and at many other places. He's the author of two books, the latest of which he published in 2012. It's called Sacred Ground, Pluralism, Prejudice, and the Promise of America. Eboo Patel joins me on the line from the studios of WBEZ in Chicago. Good morning. It's nice to talk to you.
It's great to be with you, Tom. Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about Interfaith Youth Corps and the work that you do.
So we work with college campuses to help interfaith cooperation become a social norm. We believe that just as college campuses gave rise to great social movements from civil rights to environmentalism, college campuses are wonderful laboratories and launching pads for a movement of interfaith cooperation in the 21st century. Campuses have everything from energized students to faculty who create a knowledge base, to all the ingredients to serve as a model civil society for the rest of the country on how to do religious diversity correctly.
So when you talk about religious pluralism becoming a social norm, what's that going to look like? What do you mean by that?
So it would mean everything from the average person on the street having an appreciative knowledge of world religions, from Buddhism to Hinduism to Islam to Judaism to Christianity, etc. It would mean that every major city in the country has days of interfaith service where people from the variety of houses of worship, including secular humanist societies, gather to clean rivers and to tutor children and to pick up garbage from parks. It would mean that Americans know the history of religious diversity in their country, from George Washington's letter to the Hebrew congregation of Newport, Rhode Island, to Martin Luther King Jr.'s marching with with Abraham Joshua Heschel in Selma. It's a sense that we appreciate, understand, and act upon the bridges that ought to be bringing us together.
And the acting is a really fundamental tenet of this and animating force behind your organization. You're not just talking. You're having folks do stuff together for the public good.
That's exactly right. And we view action as both a means and an end. A means in the sense that people coming together in Habitat for Humanity builds and other type of service projects is a great way for them to come to know one another. They're acting on a value shared across religious and philosophical traditions, and they're doing an activity that facilitates relationships. And of course, that same activity is something that's good for the broader society in the sense that it builds our social capital, meaning our trust, our sense of neighborliness, our volunteerism, etc. All of these things are absolutely essential for a functioning civil society.
Eboo Patel, he'll be giving the annual Mannequin Clark Lecture for the Institute for Christian and Jewish Studies on May 13th at Goucher College. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Living Questions here on Maryland Morning, 88.1 WYPR. You cite in your book, you mentioned this notion of social capital. That's a term coined by a guy named Robert Putnam from Harvard. He's a social anthropologist, and he has done some studies, done a lot of thinking about religion, as have you, that he's found that there's less trust between folks in communities that are more diverse. What is the cause of that?
So this is actually a striking and somewhat challenging social science finding. And this is in a paper that Putnam put out called E Pluribus Unum, Community and Diversity in the 21st Century. You can find it easily online. And it's an empirical study that Putnam does, which finds that neighborhoods, apartment complexes, cities that are more diverse have less social capital. They have less trust, less volunteer energy, less philanthropy, lower rates of voting, things along these lines, which is to say that two things that we tend to value in our society, diversity and social capital, are actually inversely correlated. Putnam hastens to add that this is only when diversity is left to its own devices. In other words, only when diversity is unengaged. he says that we have to actually proactively engage diversity to get positive social benefits out of it. We have to organize programs that bring people from different backgrounds together. We have to learn how to tell our story as a city or as a country in a manner that welcomes the many contributions from diverse backgrounds and identities. So I actually think that this affirms the kind of work that ICJS and Interfaith Youth Corps are doing, precisely because organizations like ours are not leaving diversity to its own devices, precisely because we are organizing programs and activities that bring people together, that facilitate relationships, that organize activities where people can come to know one another. That's when we reap the benefit of bridged social capital, so to speak.
But that is a very disconcerting notion, isn't it? That increased religious diversity and an increased pluralism, which is something that we can all be happy about and something that we can celebrate, can actually, in many ways, make religious tolerance harder to achieve. How do you reconcile those two things?
I actually don't find it disconcerting. I find it striking and I find it inspiring. And what I mean by that is, basically, those of us in a diverse society like the United States of America have an opportunity to act upon that diversity to make our society better. We cannot simply be bystanders. And I actually think that this is an important thread throughout the American experiment, this notion that we all have a responsibility in building our country, in building our civil society. And it turns out that the social science evidence around diversity is like anything else, which is if you leave it to itself, it will likely tend in a negative direction. But if you act on it positively and constructively, you could reap significant social benefits. It's actually one of the reasons that we distinguish between the words diversity and pluralism. Following the great Harvard scholar Diana Eck, we understand diversity to be simply a demographic fact, simply the fact of people with different identities living in close quarters. The term diversity ought say nothing about the direction that that interaction goes. It can just as easily become a civil war as it can be inspiring cooperation. Pluralism, distinct from diversity, is an achievement. It's the achievement of respect for diverse identities. It's the achievement of relationships between diverse communities. It's the achievement of a sense of commitment to the common good. What we are after is pluralism, but we will not achieve pluralism without working for it.
And when it comes to putting people together, you know, developing programs like the Interfaith Youth Corps and ICJS, Interfaith Youth Corps was very instrumental in helping President Obama sort of form and forge his notion of the Faith Council. What is the role of political the leadership in this country, both in the federal, state, and local levels, in terms of cultivating a place where diversity is achieved and respected?
So let me actually be specific about what my organization, Interfaith Youth Corps, has done with President Obama and the White House. I served on the president's first Faith Council at his invitation. And as a consequence of that, we collectively developed something called the President's Interfaith and Community Service Campus Challenge that invited campuses to run high-quality interfaith service learning programs. And over the course of the past 5 or 6 years of that challenge, about 500 campuses have participated. But as far as your question of what's the role of the political in moving the fact of diversity to the achievement of pluralism, let me point out at least two things. Number one, I think that the legal and constitutional framework around religious freedom, around non-establishment, around no religious test for office, these kinds of things that are deep in the American tradition, I think they need to continue to be protected by the legal and political establishment. And the second thing is, I think that our politicians need to tell an inspiring story of a diverse country, need to help create kind of the grand narrative of America as a nation where people from the four corners of the earth, praying to God in different languages and also not at all, can come together to build a country. And I think that President Obama, like other presidents, has done a terrific job at that. I remember his first inaugural address in 2009, where he speaks of America's patchwork heritage as a strength and not a weakness, and talks of America as a nation of Muslims and Christians, Jews and Hindus and non-believers, and says that, you know, because we have experienced those bitter chapters of segregation and civil war and come out stronger and more united. We believe that a shrinking world will reveal our common humanity. That kind of speech is hugely important in helping a citizenry appreciate its diversity and turn that diversity into pluralism.
In your last book, Sacred Ground, you talk a lot about rising anti-Muslim sentiment in the United States. You are of Indian ancestry and a Muslim, although you've studied and even practiced some other religions at various times in your life. You talk about the Cordoba House in New York, which was Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf's efforts to build a community center in New York, came to be known as the Ground Zero Mosque. And there was a bigoted sign there at one of those anti-Cordoba House rallies that said, "I learned all I need to know about Islam on 9/11. When it comes to countering anti-Muslim sentiment in America, is it generational? Are you finding that the college kids that you're working with are simply not going to go down that path in the way that some of their parents and grandparents may have?
I don't know if it's so much generational as relational. What we have found anecdotally, and the social science evidence backs this up, is if you have a meaningful personal relationship with a Muslim or a Mormon or an evangelical or a Baha'i, your view of that entire community improves. And it might be that that young people organically have more relationships with people from different religious backgrounds simply because every generation seems to be more religiously diverse than the one before, and they are going to schools and kicking it in hip-hop ciphers and playing ball at the YMCA with people from all different backgrounds, and therefore have a better chance of developing personal, meaningful relationships. But I know a whole lot of folks who are a part of older generations who have similar personal and meaningful relationships with people from different religions and therefore much more positive views of those faiths.
Eboo Patel, he'll be giving the annual Manekin Clark Lecture sponsored by the Institute for Christian and Jewish Studies Wednesday night, May 13th, 7 o'clock at Krausauer Auditorium on the campus of Goucher College. His talk is entitled Interfaith Leadership, Building a Healthy Democracy. His latest book is called Sacred Ground, Pluralism, Prejudice, and the Promise of America. We've got a link to all the details on our website, wypr.org/livingquestions. Eboo Patel, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. You've been listening to the latest installment in our series, Living Questions, produced by WIPR in partnership with the Institute for Christian and Jewish Studies, in which we examine the role of religion in the public sphere. You can hear the other conversations in our Living Questions series when you visit our website. Again, the address is wipr.org/livingquestions. On 88.1, I'm Tom Hall. It's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. Stay with us.